Space Oddity.
Hello and welcome back to Space Oddity, the podcast of the Collaborative Research Center 1265, Refiguration of Spaces. My name is Daniel, and this is our first episode of 2023, and we have quite a treat prepared for you. Today, we will take you on a very special walk through the city of Berlin. Some time ago, we received a visit from three Dutch researchers who took members of our research center on a special walk just outside the Technical University of Berlin. We were a group of around 25 professors, researchers, and students, and on a Wednesday afternoon, we went down the stairs of our office building and met our guides. Niels ten Over, Maxigas, and Jeroen de Vos from the Critical Infrastructure Lab at the University of Amsterdam. They are researchers that investigate the relationship between society and communication infrastructures and how these affect the way we experience cities. Equipped with sensors and with a sharp eye for detail, they took us on a walk and opened our eyes for first signs of a new infrastructure that is being deployed globally as we speak. This is a technology that promises an even faster internet and that will allow an unprecedented amount of devices to be connected and to communicate between each other with little to no delay. I'm speaking about the 5G network. No matter if we talk about the Internet of Things or about the smart city of the future, all of these grand visions and projects are dependent on this 5G infrastructure.
Right, so the idea is that you take a walk, right? Walking on the street, walking in public space, and actually invite participants to join in this walk to actually interrogate public space, and more specifically to interrogate sensors or digital sensors as part of public space configurations. So it's basically, besides being a walk, it's also a research methodology in which you initially try to sort of invite people to say, come and join us on this walk, but look at the built environment, look at your surroundings, not as your usual self, but try and put on this lens at which you specifically zoom into and detail all these sort of infrastructural and telecommunications infrastructural things that you can see in the built environment. So it is a walk that is actually used as a methodology for interrogating public telecommunication infrastructure in general, but in this case 5G also in specific.
While we usually cannot really see this infrastructure, except perhaps some new antennas on some rooftops, this infrastructure can be visualized with specialized equipment. But with a little trick, we can actually hear this vital layer that makes life as we know it possible. The devices generating the sounds you will hear in a minute were found and recorded on the streets of Berlin. For now, let's just say that these sounds really show us how there are devices that are constantly talking to each other, and they talk to each other quite independently from human intervention. It is truly a whole ecosystem of devices, sensors, antennas, and computers. With a special microphone, though, we suddenly uncover a layer of sound that forms part of our city's soundscape. In this episode, we will first take you on this 5G walk, and later we will discuss in an interview with Niels, Maxigas, and Jeroen how the 5G network is tied to politics, power, and, of course, space.
Welcome to the 5G infrastructure walk. We're very happy you're all with us here today. I'm Niels. This is my colleague Maxigas and my colleague Jeroen. So we're going to engage in a joint investigation today. So I'm going to invite you to, during this walk, try to go around a bit like an ornithologist, but for sensors and antennas. So like right now, you see a few, three very cute little birds, they're sitting on the side of the building. Those birds are cameras, but the cameras also have signals that are sent somewhere. So let's go walk to the middle of the island where we do our first intervention and try to spot as much as we can along the way to train our senses.
In the 5G infrastructure work, we try to practice what is called the ethnography of infrastructure. And the purpose of this walk around is really not to learn exactly what that one antenna does. We will use those kind of questions to transform our perception. I will just say what probably everybody who looked into it once knows, that the infrastructure, the first property of the infrastructure is that it tends to fade into the woodwork of society. So the ethnography of infrastructure is a struggle against the tendency of the infrastructure to disappear.
So infrastructure, there are the different kinds. There are the towers that are almost like the idiosyncratic part of the cityscape. But then there are also these temporary infrastructures. But temporary infrastructures are a bit like the pioneer trees at the side of the forest that make space, see if it's possible. And I see this as a kind of a pioneer tree, and that's becoming very hard. But the good thing with these temporary infrastructures is that they're more visible. So they're also more easily to contest. Right now, no one is looking at us. And only the footage of the camera is stored locally. But it is sent remotely to a control space when the algorithm inside the local implementation decides something is verdächtig, so something is suspect. So instead of a person judging that something is suspect, we now leave it to an algorithm to decide what is suspect and thereby make an intrusion into privacy. For some reason, BauWatch thought this was much less intrusive and much more accountable. When we tried to understand what algorithm this was and what the criteria were, there were no more information to be found and were not to be disclosed because this was
trade secret.
A trade secret, exactly. So if we achieve anything by the end of this walk, is that you will know what are the antennas close to your home. And you'll get comfortable with looking that up and at least understanding your own sensory environment.
For instance, when we arrived, several people told us that there are no security cameras at the university. And as you remember, just the place where we started, there are already three of them installed on the same floor that the research group is hosted on and where we will go back for the debriefing.
So this really echoes some of the deep thinking of the Dutch footballer and philosopher Johan Cruyff, who says you only see it when you get it, right? So let's try to get it, and let's try to get it even more. Let's go.
Hello everyone, this is René on behalf of the SFB 1265, Refiguration of Spaces. This is a podcast that is especially for the cross-sectional team Objectified Infrastructures. I'm part of project BO2, that's called Control-Space, the spatiality of digital infrastructures in contextures, maps, and discourses. Today, we present a podcast which is about our event that we recently had, the 5G walk. So yesterday we did it here in Berlin at the Ernst Reuter Platz. There were about 25 people attending, some from the SFB, some external guests. I think it was quite an interesting group of people gathering and exploring the space together with you. What do you think was special for, based on the questions you just raised, for this Asphalterplatz or for Berlin compared to previous walks that you did?
Yeah. Well, it's good to mention that I mean, the concept of an infra walk is or infrastructure walk is not new, but we have been sort of working on it also with the specific expertise on infrastructures and protocols and sort of governance structures behind these technologies. So we have a particular sort of knowledge that we bring into these walks. But this is about the third or fourth walk that we have done. And for us, it's actually the first walk in Germany, the first walk in Berlin. And I think what we noticed is that there's quite some differences between what we found or what we could find based on just looking at sensors, but also a little bit of desk research. Where that brought us compared to what we already knew coming from a Dutch context. Maybe you want to elaborate, Maxikas, there?
What we are doing with the walk also fits into this larger framework. So we are working to found this research center called the Critical Infrastructure Laboratory. And within that, we have this analytical framework mapping the different moments of the innovation process. So we are also doing research on standardization of 5G protocols. Implementation of them is something that I'm studying with other methods at the moment. And this is our way to study the deployment of 5G. And indeed, what we found, for instance, is that in Amsterdam, there are already 5G antennas installed on the rooftops by the big telecommunications companies. And indeed, as probably many listeners read in the news, these antennas are largely supplied by the Chinese company Huawei, who is currently the market leader in 5G. And that's very different from the other antennas that we see on the rooftops that come from Nokia and Ericsson and other usually European companies. Despite the antennas being there in Amsterdam and in the Netherlands, they haven't managed to auction the new frequencies that these 5G protocols would make use of. So the 5G protocols are, some of them are not working and some of them are using the old frequencies, so they cannot make use of the more advanced features. What we see in the Berlin radioscape, in the Berlin wavelengths, is that the 5G antennas are not there, but the 5G protocols are already working through the old antennas, so some part of 5G is there, and as we tested with our phones, 5G capable phones actually announced that they are doing 5G, but this is just 4G with some 5G flavor is more of a marketing move in order to introduce this technology to the end users, to the consumers, to the citizens, and also perhaps to legitimize the future developments. Because compared to Amsterdam, another finding was that in Amsterdam, everybody is very proud of their infrastructure and very eager to deploy any new technologies because they are really associated with modernity and progress and being a global city. So for instance, there are much more antennas and also they are deployed on the edge of the buildings in order to have bigger visibility because it's a smaller but very dense city. This is in a, it was a big contrast for us exploring the radioscapes of Berlin, where there is lots of space on the street, there are huge buildings, and indeed there are fewer antennas, bigger ones, and they are located in the middle of the houses.
When we were here, it was very hard to discover infrastructure, and yesterday my big point of frustration was I was looking on OpenCell ID, and I knew one of the biggest masts in the surroundings was supposed to be on the German Opera. and I walked, it was almost like Jericho, 7 times around the opera to see those antennas, but I couldn't. But now I see them, because they are always placed on the highest point and as far away from the side as possible. So it's impossible to see them.
And that's exactly the opposite that we see in the Netherlands, where they put it on the edge of the building, so it has good coverage towards one direction. But also, it seems that, you know, the Netherlands is a Protestant country. They don't have curtains, and all the architecture is oriented towards the outside. And it seems that in Germany, maybe also because of the cold, the buildings are oriented towards the inside. And it seems that the antennas are also in the middle of the building instead of on the edge of the building.
Which are the antennas?
Pardon?
Which are the antennas?
Especially, we can see them there. So they are the sticking ones, out.
So you see the rectangular pieces on top of the, yeah. of the, those are the antennas.
All of them.
All of them.
All of them.
They are all of them antennas.
All of them.
No, and that's why I was so frustrated. I didn't see them. Because I know these are going to be many. But, and I was like, why can I not see them? What is this trick? So if you get only a little bit closer, they are telecom and T-Mobile, and
mobile phone antennas.
A lot of mobile phone antennas.
We can also see, if you look to the other side, on the top of the buildings, you can see that citizens and residential buildings used to put their own antennas for radio and then for television. So these are kind of remnants of the past now, because a lot of these are digital. But you can see that nowadays it's the mobile phone companies that are using the rooftop to put their antennas. Before, it was the little council of the little residential building who decided to put up their mast. And you can see that everybody put different antennas on them. So there is a kind of stratification of different generations of antennas. And we can see the history as a kind of archaeological layers that are layered on the top of the roof.
To summarize, in Amsterdam there are many antennas. There are already new 5G antennas installed on the rooftops, but there is no spectrum for them. In Germany, the spectrum allocation for the new 5G frequencies already happened, but the antennas are the ones that are missing. And we are really wondering where the 5G antennas will go, because in order to make use of the new 5G protocols, there will have to be a higher density of antennas. There will have to be many more antennas separated by smaller spaces. And we are not actually sure if there is enough space that is available for antenna masts. And we foresee that this might be the beginning of a social conflict around 5G deployment in Berlin.
Oh, that's really interesting. And I find, especially, so you go into a lot of detail already, but I find it really interesting that you can see different architectures and how these different architectures relate to different cultural contexts, and how this architecture is not only in the visibility of the technology, but to unveil all that, you need to have a lot of specific knowledge. You know about the specific antennas, about the wave spectrum. I don't know if our listeners already know what the wave spectrum is. About the different institutions, companies that are in the background of that. So, how do you or do we uncover understand all this? What are the methods to get the secrets out of the infrastructure?
I would really like to emphasize at this point that even though we are doing a methodological innovation here, the impetus behind the method is really simple, and it is actually not coming from a very academic, very sophisticated approach. But it is really about trying to see, after reading all these theories about how new technologies restructure space and time, and how power relations work through communication standards, after all these theoretical works, we would like to go on the street and act as simple citizens and try to see how these devices actually do the things that are described in the book, and experience this restructuration of space and time, this redistribution of power structures. And then once you are simply interested in these antennas and interested in what is happening in the radioscape, you find ways that other people, sometimes in the academia, sometimes outside of the academia, use to understand these spaces. So we are drawing on a variety of knowledges, but it is really coming from a very simple gesture of going out on the street, looking and being curious about it. And then sitting down and doing desktop research, searching on the internet for people who might know more about it.
Yeah, but can I go into that point? Because I'm talking to you, Maxikas, you are a hacker, right? So, and yesterday we looked at all those tools that you have used, like knowledge resources that are in the hacker community, not in the academic community or in the open knowledge community, one would say activists community, that might be very useful for us as researchers to understand this dimension that we haven't gotten into yet. So can you give us some examples of what kind of tools you use to extend our senses or our knowledge, so to say?
Sure. I mean, I guess that's also come... that kind of repurposing of tools also comes from the tradition of the media department of Amsterdam, where the Digital Methods Initiative is quite famous for repurposing tools such as Google search or such as the Twitter interface for the purposes of social research. So we are trying to do that kind of work, but whereas a lot of the departmental research is focused on social media platforms, we are trying to use this approach to understand communication protocols. And indeed, for communication protocols, there is a great community of people who, as I said before, as amateurs, as hobbies, and as you say, as hackers, as activists, try to map the radio spectrum and go into really specific details. So we use the CellMapper website, but in the Dutch context, there is also the AntennaKaart website, where you can find information about each mobile phone mast and how high each antenna is installed on that mast, which are the frequencies that they occupy, which are the protocols that they speak, who is the owner for them, and who gave the permit for installing that specific antenna. Indeed, this is a kind of resources that I haven't seen being used in academic research before, but for the purposes of empirical data collection, this is an excellent repository. And also, I think what would be quite interesting to incorporate into future works is that it is also possible to contribute to these repositories. So when we do a field survey at a particular site, we could also make our own measurements that we already started with using spectrometers in the public space that measure the level of activity on each frequencies of in the radio spectrum.
I mean, also during the walk, we already had the discussion about what is public space, right? And do you also have air accounted for when we think about public space? And one of the interesting sort of thought experiments that we did at the time was to think about the fact that a lot of different frequencies can only be used by a particular type of organizations or actors. So you actually have a lot of different frequencies, that's the entire spectrum of frequencies that we have in public space.
So you, for example, say 806 megahertz or gigahertz or that's the wavelength that you have.
Yeah.
This is assigned to a specific user, so to say.
Yeah.
Might be reminded of this famous album cover where there is a triangle from glass, and then there is white light going there. And what is this triangle?
That's Pink Floyd, right?
That's Pink Floyd's cover. And what is this triangle called from the glass?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. But it's a specific...
A prisma.
A prism. Exactly. So there is a prism with a white light coming from the right side, and then the prism uses the structure of the glass to separate this white light into different colors. And I think that's a nice device to make visible the spectrum, not the radio spectrum, but the spectrum of visible light. So it foregrounds the fact that even the white light that we can perceive with our eyes is composed of different frequencies that we see as different colors. In the radio spectrum, of course, that's something that we cannot perceive with our eyes. This is why we take spectrometers to the field survey. But there are also different wavelengths, and these different wavelengths have different properties. But I give you back the word.
No, I think it's also good to sort of underline, just taking a step back, that part of this exercise is also to make these sort of questions or these sort of discussions, make them more accessible for a broader audience. So it is indeed meant that you can do these sort of walks without all of this expert knowledge. And it's mostly meant to give you a sort of a frame you can work in and be able to spike your curiosity. And that curiosity will then feed you, or you can sort of feed your own curiosity and see how far can I actually get trying to understand what are the sensors that I see and what are the purposes and what sort of standards are they a result of. So it is a way into those sort of discussions. And I think using a walk as such a simple tool also allows a broader audience to participate in these types of discussions. And then collectively, obviously, you can think about, so what type of desk research or how far do we want to go, trying to understand all of these logics, mechanisms, governance structures behind what we see on the sort of material surface of the city.
You can also take part by running this app, which is called Open Cell Cell Map ID. So you can also help gathering information and also getting information about this. So I was looking at this app, and so now we're going from last week to the now. So the Netherlands, as you know, is a very infrastructural country. Without infrastructure, there is no Netherlands. We would just be bottom of the sea. So our oldest governance body is an infrastructure governance body. It's the water boards.
There are three elections in a year for the parliament, for the local municipality, and for the regional water board.
So this is something we still have, and it is still important, and it becomes more important again.
So it's also very sort of productive in that sense, as a means to actually tie more people in the type of quite complex discussions by starting on quite sort of specific starting points.
What I found very interesting was on the basis of the wave spectrum that you could see, okay, this specific part of the wave spectrum is assigned to some owner, some authority. For example, this frequency band is assigned, it can only be used by police and emergency services. Yeah. This can only be used by a certain mobile phone provider. This next one is used for general purpose, whatever, you know? And then you can see there, this is a resource that there are fights about fights, or there's institutions dealing with the distribution of this resource that work differently in the Netherlands than in Germany, but then you have global authorities like the ITU that is somehow synchronizing this. And I think this is really interesting that you can also see in this invisible domain that you can only spot when looking at the antennas, that address it, that you can see power conflicts, resource conflicts. You can see society in there in a way.
Yes.
I think that's really an interesting part of it.
And I guess that's also where we come from. So community radio, pirate radio, it's also about conflicts of who can transmit on different wavelengths or who can shake the air in different rhythms. I even looked up act in the United Kingdom that basically outlawed techno by saying that it's illegal to play music based on repetitive beats in public space. Because that was a way to illegalize the rave culture. And then Otekre, the experimental electronic music duo, they did a track that they mathematically proved that it doesn't use any repetitive beats. So then they advised to bring a lawyer and a musicologist to attest to the non-repetitive nature of this music in the event of police harassment.
Tekra, do you know on which we might add that to the podcast if we can do it copyright?
Yes, we could use
which,
it.
Which album is it?
I can tell you where I found it.
The pink one or the...
No, it is on the Anti EP.
Ah, okay, I need to check that out. That's interesting.
Yes.
I like them very much as well.
And there you can really see this conflict about who can shake the air in and also in which rhythm. And there are laws about it, and there are also physical fights and conflicts about it. So at that moment, the rave scene was really suppressed, and that was really about these sounds that people can make or cannot make.
Yeah, that's the audible sound, but the radio waves you can only listen to with our devices or with the spectrometers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, but we can also listen to the radio waves with radios that a lot of people forgot about it. But actually, in the generation that was before the rave scene, the pirate radios were the same kind of conflict. And it's quite famous examples that they used ships anchored outside of the legal boundaries of the UK, but also the Netherlands, in order to be able to transmit these airwaves. And that was not a very esoteric movement. That was really radio waves that we cannot see with our eyes, we cannot hear with our ears, but we can use an everyday object, the FM radio, to transform them into visible sounds.
When we're thinking about our SFB or CRC, this Collaborative Research Center, which is focusing on the refiguration of space, I think that's really interesting when you see, okay, radio is an old technology. You could say, no, it's not very old, but it's quite an old technology, you know? But you have different changes within this technology. You have the old radio that you refer to, then you have newer forms of radio, digital radio, then you have all these digital standards, 1G, 2G, now 5G, that is heavily disputed, you know, the critiques about it and so on. And when we talk about that, then we can see how much of an important form that shapes our communication, or is used for our communication, and is more important for the structure of society than we think, and we realize. At the same time, when we think about the spatial forms that our CRC addresses, like network, territory, route, or a place, one could ask, where do the waveforms belong to? Do they form a network? Because a network, you usually the image you think for a network is like a direct connection, it's like the wire, you know, a network of wires, you know, or something like this. But waveforms are not so unidirectional. They distribute into different directions. They have certainly that would be an interesting question. But they're specific to territory, but the boundaries are not so clear for waveforms. You know, the waves don't end at the border of Germany, you know? So when I was young, I was listening, I grew up in southern Germany, and I was listening to the Austrian radio station because it was much better than the German one, you know? And I was able to listen it when I was on a small hill, and there was not, when I got down, I was not able to listen to that. So that's really interesting for boundaries of territories, you know?
There is a very old paper, could be from 1978, about the radio spectrum as a natural resource. And that already lays out a kind of framework to theorize the conflicts around the radio spectrum in an analogy to the conflicts about other natural resources. Indeed, one of the grand missions of the research center on the long term would be to rethink media theory from the ground up, not seeing everything as an analogy to networks, but try to see what happens if you think about radioscapes as an alternative to the network, to the sociological imaginary of networks. That network idea is really, as you very precisely pointed out, it is based on the idea of computers and then cables between these computers, and this kind of visuals, mapping and imaginary figures are also used even if we are talking about Wi-Fi or Bluetooth connections, for instance. Indeed, this is not true, and Adrian McKenzie published a book and some papers that more than a decade ago, I guess, laid the foundations for a new kind of media theory that starts from radiophonic phenomena like interference, for instance, that we already used to theorize conflicts in our work. This idea of the spectrum instead of the idea of a stack or layers or different protocols being active on the same wire. I do think that these bring a very different orientation, and at least, for instance, when it comes to the social conflicts around 5G, such an approach based on the materialities of the research object that we are trying to understand might be much more thoughtful and produce better interpretations, might have a stronger interpretative power.
To switch the topic to something different, I would be interested, Jeroen, you mentioned that this is not only addressed at academic audiences, but also might have some impact for general audiences, or could be an approach to empower people to understand, understand structures, understand conflicts, understand, or even address problems. What do you think? What could be a use for walks like this, also for beyond our academic discussions of theories and wavelengths and so on.
Yeah. Well, it's good to have a bit more of this knowledge and a bit more of this curiosity in the public domain. Not only coming from academia and academic knowledge, or coming from sort of corporate type of knowledge and marketing type of messages. What you want is you want to spike a broader curiosity in order to actually collectively have a conversation about what we want. What do we want with all of these centers? How do we want to organize them? What purpose should they function for? And obviously, this is a discussion that cannot only be done by either academics or companies, for that matter. You do want to include policymakers that create agenda on national level, on city level. You do want to include people that live in a particular city and might have a particular thought about issues of connectivity, issues of privacy, issues of sort of imagining particular futures for their cities and for their own communities. So it's good to try and open up that debate a little bit more. And these walks might obviously help to do so, but it should be part of a broader package of things that we want to do, right? And I think we, it's good to be open to all of these different methodologies that we can put to use to try and include a broader set of people in this discussion. That said, I mean, part of the contestations that you see around this discussion is actually about also partially because of the lack of knowledge or the sort of uniformity of the type of messages that you find and the type of narratives that you would find in the public domain. So it's also an effort to diversify those type of messages that I think is very much necessary in order to have a better discussion.
Yeah, so it is not just about getting people excited and making them care about the digital and radio infrastructures around them, but also trying to engage with publics who are already mobilized around a certain topic. So 5G, as we know, is widely contested. Especially during the pandemic, there were a lot of conspiracy theories spread connecting 5G towers to the coronavirus, even to arguments about the vaccine having chips and being inserted to people so people like Bill Gates can control them through mind control devices that, by the way, also work with the radio. And this might have subsided a bit when people realized that they got the vaccine, but their 5G reception didn't really improve. In the meantime, for instance, in the whole province of Brussels, the whole 5G deployment was stopped as a result of citizens' protests, and the government had to put up a consensus committee that I think they call a citizens' committee actually in the Brussels context, but more widely it is known as a consensus committee, where experts and citizens sit together for a number of weeks and try to understand an emerging technology, a coming innovation, and then make a recommendation report to policymakers that have to be taken into account when setting the information policy of that area, usually that country. And as a result of this process, there were several years that 5G towers could not transmit because there was a health concern that the new frequencies that they would use would damage the human body, and then that was even these concerns were not echoed by the World Health Organization, but the World Health Organization also said in a statement that indeed there is not a lot of studies about these frequencies and they don't look too dangerous. However, there should be more scientific research and more experiments and more measurements about it. Now, how we come to this discussion, having also researched the imaginaries of conspiracy theorists about the topic, is through several angles, but one of these is trying to also use these walks to find a better material basis, to find the real issues why 5G we think is problematic, and try to engage with his citizens about the discussions that we think make more sense than some of the far-fetched moral panic around this emerging technology. Because it is not that we are very enthusiastic about the new 5G future, we are actually very critical of this technology, but we are critical of it in a different way than a lot of the publics who are already engaged with it. However, I think it is a great thing that there are people who actually question technological progress as an assumption that we should always adopt new technologies just because they are new, that everything that is new must be better than what was before. And this whole association between technological development and human development, that is one of the widespread tropes of modernity, I think that's really significant. That at this moment in time, it is not just 5G networks coming as a technological, as a new wave of protocols to be deployed, but there is also a public discussion about them. And if we could put these together in a sensible and productive way, that would be great. And that's, I hope, one of the things that the new critical infrastructure lab could work on.
So thank you very much. So I have maybe a final question. So if you have any other points, we can bring them up. But a question I would like to ask you, or maybe a, so the listeners might have listened to what we did and heard some of the recordings from on site. If people would like to do a little 5G walk on the way to work or on a Sunday afternoon, what would you recommend them to look at? Maybe three or four things they should look at while walking through the city and think about. Would you have a few things that you had in mind?
I would say to see. I would say three things that are very simple. The first rule of visual observation of radio infrastructures is simply to look up. So when you walk on the street, you usually look at the people around you or maybe the pavement. Instead of that, if you just look up and follow the devices that are looking down at you, that already transforms your experience of the city and your perception. So looking up is the first rule of visual observation of radio infrastructures in public space. And the second is if you have a good camera, then at least what I do is always look for the little stickers on the devices. So once you spotted a device, you try to go around it, you try to get a view from different angles, and try to see if there is a little sticker with the make and the model of that device. And based on this, a simple internet search can yield you the manual, as we found in several cases in preparing the walk, and through that you can also have ideas about what kind of organizations might use this device for what purpose, where the data might go, and so on. And the third one is to find out what is the best online map of antennas in this area, and only in a lot of these maps you can actually select the 5G antennas. You can do that in the Netherlands, you can do that in Belgium, and with some effort you can also do that based on the global maps like cellmapper.org in Germany. And then you could try to find which are these new antennas and are the 5G antennas already on the rooftop, and who is putting them there for what reason. So that would be the three things. Look up, then try to find a sticker, and look on a map and try to see if there are interesting antennas that you could look for when you're on the street.
And I have one additional final question that we could maybe put into the notes. What do you have recommendations what people should read or where they could get further information for reading? Which is a good book, a good paper on the topic that you would recommend for a start?
That's a good question, and I guess at some point we should produce one. but I'm sure there are many good resources. I would just mention the signal traffic book that really brought the study of media infrastructures into the narrower media studies field. This book is very useful because each chapter looks at a different type of device. So there are there is a chapter on undersea cables, there is a chapter on satellite dishes, there is a chapter on data centers. Whichever kind of technological device you want to study as part of an infrastructural lens, you can find some examples in this book. And the introduction gives a quite good overview of approaches to infrastructure in an interdisciplinary way, but from the media studies perspective.
Okay, thank you very much. It was great to have you here. It was a great experience for all the participants. And I think I'm sure that there will be interest also for the listeners. So keep your eyes open for the next infrastructure walk in your hometown. Thank you very much and goodbye.